Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Mine does filtered water and filtered sparkling water too, both chilled, which is ideal. I love my Cooker tap. It's just the greatest. If you can afford one, I highly recommend it. Go to cooker.co.uk, Cooker spelled Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. I also want to thank them for sponsoring my new platform, lovejoy.co.uk too. This is a platform where I talk about health, fitness, and navigating life. I haven't turned into a guru, not just yet anyway. I'm taking all the knowledge from my experts on these podcasts and putting it on a platform where you can consume it and become wise and be the man or the woman down the pub who knows everything about life and health and I don't know, all those things you need to do. Seriously though, I've not thought of a business plan with it yet, but I have learned so much from doing these podcasts. I just thought it'd be a great idea to share it. Cooker have bought into that vision too, which is why I love them. A company with great values, and they can see it's just kind of, you know, they've been involved in the podcast for a long time and they've listened to the experts, and I'm trying to put it out there so it's accessible to everyone. I'm not trying to be the new Jeff Bezos. I just hope it can be sustainable and be a good reference for life from experts. There is stuff on there about sleep, diet, mental health, hair loss, etc., etc. And by the way, people keep asking me about the trial I'm doing for Unthin, which is a hair loss lotion. I went a bit quiet because it sort of slowed down. But I have to say it's picked up again. I have got good growth. But look, let's not mess around. I'm still really bored. So I don't know. I have loads more hair than when I started, but they say it's going to take a year for the best results. So I'm always reluctant to push a product when I've not finished the trial. If you can wait a year, I'd do that and see what happens, see how much hair I've got after a year. If not, go to unthin.co.uk and use the code LOVEJOY10 to get the first month for a tenner. My new platform is lovejoy.co.uk, so that's cooker.co.uk for a cooker, lovejoy.co.uk for the new platform, and unthin.co.uk, code LOVEJOY10. If you want to try Unthin, but don't blame me if it doesn't work. I mean, you know, it's not my fault. You're going to love our hour today, as it's on the most important subject for humans. Today, I'm curious about the science of nutrition. Joining me for this conversation is one of the UK's leading nutritionists, Rhian Lambert, who has written a book, The Science of Nutrition, which I have to say is a brilliant book. Hello, Rhian.
Oh, thanks, Tim. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. I got your book in and I felt like I was at school learning all the stuff that I didn't really know at school because what you've done. Actually, why don't you explain your book? What is your book about?
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you actually referenced it almost like being at school, because I think the general public, as a nutritionist, are very used to very glamorized images of people saying, eat this way and this will achieve X, Y, Z. But what I actually wanted to do was to educate everybody the fundamentals, because I think people just, they don't want to be lied to anymore. They want to have the science broken down. So it's like, I'd describe it like an encyclopedia, the science of nutrition, but in a Q&A format. So any question, if you've got a dinner party, you've got friends over, or it's on the coffee table, or you've got a family and you've got kids at home, it appeals to all age ranges. If you've got any question, from is it normal to fart, or should I be eating carbs, what about alcohol, or hang on, do I need to be worried about sugar? Basically, it's everything to do with the science of nutrition, and then you can pull your own judgment and make your own choices once you've been educated
in it. It's a beautiful book, and I have to say, you know, I didn't know what to make of it to begin with. I started reading through and I thought, I actually think I'm really well informed on diet, but I actually don't know the intricacies of what it's actually doing and what's happening. And I've done a lot of podcasts on diet, and what I loved about your book is it's a great reference book. It really is, and it's done in such a beautiful way with lots of diagrams, lots of pictures. As I say, I felt like I was reading at school, but in a good way, not a bad way, because I didn't like school.
I don't think many people did, to be honest.
But I really enjoyed learning that. Let's just go find out a bit about you first of all. So how have you got to this position of writing this book? What is your background?
So Yeah, good question to start. And my background isn't actually in science at all. And I was just like you at school. I wasn't really interested in most of the subjects, especially not the science related ones. I used to be a singer. So my background is in music, performance, and it's actually in the music industry. I got signed to labels at the age of 17. So I was quite young. And that was my pathway up to London from a countryside town in Wiltshire. That's my kind of background, is a very humble one, but one where I got very lucky, won a competition and got the chance to sing. So it was never intended to be science. And I think through the, I guess, the devastating impact of the music industry, we're talking 10 plus years ago. So it was all about how you looked, how restrictive you could be, subliminal messages that the way you look will dictate the success, doesn't matter how good your voice is. And I found it quite a toxic kind of area to be in, myself personally. And by the time I got to 21, which I know sounds extremely young still, but you are classified a mature student, Tim, when you're 21, you know.
Right.
That's the age. Apparently you are mature at universities. I went back to study, and I went to study a degree in nutrition because I thought, well, I'm so interested in food and performance. So it was more from a performance kind of focused area, and probably from a negative relationship I had with it myself. I think I just wanted to learn more. And from doing a three-year degree, I got a first class in that degree and went on to do a master's in obesity risks and prevention. I'm also a master practitioner with the psychological interventions, because I believe psychology and nutrition work so closely hand in hand. Basically, I'm not going to give you my whole resume, but I was so passionate about the subject. I realized there's a huge gap between a practitioner, a clinician, linking psychology and nutrition together. Actually asking people, well, why do you feel that way? Why do you think? Let's get to the bottom of the problem. Let's not just prescribe a diet. Let's educate and understand why you as a unique individual have this relationship with food and how we can help you function long term. So it was really I got the bug. I got the study bug.
And we must point out at this stage that there's the problem with the word nutritionist is there's a lot of I want to say the word charlatans, but that's not really fair. But there's people who sort of do a couple of weekends.
It's true though, Tim.
Well, it's weekend courses, isn't it? I've learned how to do it, and then here I am spouting my stuff. You're intolerant of avocados and that sort of stuff, and it's like, what? And it's like, you know, this stuff happens. You see it and hear it a lot, and I think that must be a fundamental problem with your industry, is that there's a lot of those guys out there, or men and women out there, who are selling that service.
Absolutely, because nutrition, ultimately everybody eats, and everybody has an emotion or a feeling surrounding food, a way that they see. I call it, in the TED talk I did, I call it the food world. So how every single person sees the world of food to them as a positive or negative place. And it can trigger so many emotions, which is why we become vulnerable. And this is when you'll get these people that have done a week-long course, or you'll get personal trainers that have done 2 or 3 hours one weekend telling everybody this is how you eat and this is why how you'll look like me. But the fundamentals of it are, it is so much more complex. It's almost the more you learn, the less you feel like you know.
Yeah.
It's such a complex area. But there is a government petition to protect the title nutritionist out there. It's just sadly, I think, well, not sadly, quite rightly so, the pandemic and lots of other things have taken over the priorities of the world right now.
Yeah, and I'd stay tuned, because I learned loads, so I'm sure you're going to learn loads, even if you think you're well informed on diet. Just want to go back to you being a soprano singer, Royal Academy of Music and stuff, just because it made me think, reading that about how you left that life behind, it made me start thinking about the classics and also elite sport. Just part elite sport for 1 minute, but the classics, it just seems that it's very dated. It still seems that if you ever watch a documentary series on ballet dancing or playing the violin or something, it seems like it's really cruel still. It's very much, we want the elite and we're going to push you. So, you know, it's push, practice for 15 hours a day. Is it like that? It just feels like that, the pressures of it.
I have to say, I wasn't prepared for this. You know, I won a competition to get access to the Royal Academy of Music. I didn't financially have the funding or anything to become a student there, and I lived at the time with people that were playing the violin, a pianist, you know, from all countries, one girl from Taiwan, one from Paris, one from Sweden, and we all shared a flat together. They dedicated their life from the age of 4 or 5 to knowing that they were going to go to the Royal Academy of Music, and the hours and the funding that must have been behind them. So I'm sure times have changed, but it is a dog-eat-dog world, the performance world. You get one shot, you know, to get the most out of this incredible education. And so many of the students are so grateful for being there. I think I learned a hell of a lot at a young age, seeing these other students, the dedication they had to their art, but at the same time, the toxic pressure it can put on a young person's psychology, on their mind, on their health, their mental health, essentially, is shockingly bad. So it's finding that balance between the two.
I think we could do an hour on this, and I won't. I'll move on to diet. But I think some of this elite yeah. world is a reflection on society at the moment. It just, the win at all costs, cheat, win, push yourself. I mean, it's just really unhealthy. And elite sport has gone so far down that road. I don't know if you're a football fan, but it seems a very, very, very long time ago since Robbie Fowler was going, no ref, David Seaman didn't touch me. Now it's just spend as much money, you know, and cheat as much as you can, as long as you win. Don't worry about anything else. And I think it's a terrible reflection on where we're going in the world. But there you go. Let's talk about nutrition instead, shall we?
Football isn't. I do have some footballers. They're not my. I'm not a sports expert though, Tim.
Okay.
I can advise on how they can eat. That's it.
It's nice to see they're looking after the way they eat. That's important. Let's go into the first one then. I'm not just going to stay on this, but just let's whet everyone's appetite. If you wanted to lose fat, you wanted to lose weight, how would you? It's a really big question to start with. How would you go about doing it if you were to advise a client? Because, you know, that's what most people want to hear. And then we'll go into the various diets. But that's what most people want to hear when they go and see a nutritionist, I assume.
Absolutely. You've probably started with the biggest golden question that everybody wants to know. And there's a few false red flags out there. The first one that I would tell people to be aware of is anyone that just says, well, it's simple, just calorie count your way through. It's absolutely not that simple for so many people. We have the data and the research that calories are not accurate anyway. I mean, this is an 120-year-old calculation. So the first thing I have to do is explain to my client who sat in front of me, I'll have had an hour. Bear in mind the beauty of one-to-one sessions. You get a whole hour with a client to learn about how they were brought up. Did they have takeaway Friday nights every Friday? Is that something they do now with their families? Do they lean towards comfort eating? Do they not? What's their stress level like, their job, their digestion? I'll have an inside picture after an hour of essentially interviewing them in the nicest way possible to find out what their goals are and what they want. And a lot of the time people say, well, I've tried calorie counting, you know, I've been on very low calorie diets and I've been exercising loads and the weight just isn't coming off. And it's because we're missing the point. We're missing the point that our body does not see numbers, it sees food. And this is what saddens me so much. And it's so difficult because at a public health nutrition level, so we're talking about to give advice to the whole of the country about nutrition, the simplest thing to tell people is to count calories because everybody can technically do it. But the calculations are not accurate. How do you yourself work out as a unique individual how much you burned that day? We'll never get it 100%. Even in laboratories, when we study this at universities, we have people sitting in all kind of bizarre equipment that you'd laugh about, you know, the little AirPod things, and we can measure people in water and we can hook them up to all sorts of machines and measure the exhalation and the breath coming out. And we can try and calculate all these things, but they're all rough estimates, right? And if you're calorie counting, it almost gives a lot of people the kind of freedom to say, well, you can eat a poor quality diet if it's low calorie and still lose weight. That doesn't equal health. And your body won't be liking that. Now, your gut, we can get into gut health in a bit, but gut bacteria is essential here, and it plays a huge role with weight maintenance and the constitution of your food. So how much fiber is inside your food, how much healthy fat, the vitamins and minerals, how hydrated you are, all helps the body send the correct signals to the brain we need to help regulate our bowel movements. All of these factors play a role. To summarise, calorie counting is not accurate, essentially 30% inaccurate up to on the packets on the shop shelves. So it's a bit of a guessing game, and you've got a lot of people out there just shouting energy in, energy out.
I put myself on the, I was asked to go on, I said yes immediately, the PREDICT trial, you know, that one Tim Spector did, Professor Tim Spector.
Yes, yes.
And I put myself on that. And what was great about that is when they send back the findings, the it's things like blood sugar level and things mm-hmm. that they discuss. When we all had to eat the same food, because we're all given muffins and various things, the difference between how all our bodies dealt with it was phenomenal. And there was a range.
Exactly.
So you know, I eat a calorie of chicken and you eat a calorie of chicken, our bodies might like it different or deal with it in different ways. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
100%. And we've got, Tim is fabulous. And I think he used a good example. I always refer to it with his wife and himself and how his wife reacted to grapes very differently to he did. You know, it shows we're unique individuals and all these numbers and calculations don't take that into account. And then I really try to educate my clients, try and get some better options out there in terms of cooking from scratch a little bit more. Because once you make a chocolate brownie yourself and you know how much butter and sugar goes into a chocolate brownie, it might change your perspective when you buy it when you're out and about. Mm. So there's a level of just, I think the public have been lied to essentially and sold a false promise that weight loss is super easy if you just count calories. It's just not
the thing
true.
I loved in your book is the set point talking because that's something which really resonated with me. My weight's been pretty standard, but I have fluctuated like everybody else, you know, and between, you know, maybe a stone or something up and down as it goes. I'm quite light at the moment. I'll explain why in a minute. But it goes up. But I do realize that. I've put myself on lots of diets to try them. I do it out of fascination. I've done the carnivore diet. Oh my God, that's hard work. All you do is eat meat.
Whoa.
Mentally really tough. Mentally really tough.
Yeah, well done. It's not one I would advise. Or I don't know why I'm saying well done, because I don't think that's well done.
Well, I just thought I'd do it. So I just ate meat. I lasted about 2.5 weeks and then I went, I can't do this anymore, because I just mentally it really, I've done the no carbs diet, which we've got to discuss in a minute, because that's important. I've done the intermittent fasting. I've done become a vegetarian.
Yeah, vegetarianism, got it.
And I've just come off plant-based, which I'll discuss with you in a few minutes' time. But the interesting thing is you've got this diagram, and I can't really describe it. You'll have to do it for me. But where you start losing weight and then your body sort of panics and goes, oh, God, what are we doing? And then there's this thing called a set weight. And I've noticed that on all the diets, immediately there's a reaction and then my body changes it. And so explain how that works.
Yeah, it's an amazing theory. So it's a theory, first of all. Not everybody in the scientific world agrees with it, but I discuss that in the book in depth, how, you know, you can take what you want from the book. You know, it's up to you. But it's an evolutionary theory, which means it's based upon the principle that to stay optimally healthy, we all have a set range. And it can vary from, you know, 2 to 3 kilos or however, it could be bigger or smaller for some people, of where we're meant to sit at with our body weight. And the problem is most people aspire to be the lowest weight they've ever seen on the scales in their life. And this lowest weight can continue until whatever age, but we're actually meant to gain weight sometimes as we age. We can't stay the same weight all the time. And your body will go into a state of, oh my goodness, I'm in a state of famine. It's based on, you know, back in the day, how our body would respond with fat cell storage and try and preserve what it's got rather than let it go. And that's why a lot of people find it very hard. You hit this plateau with weight loss. And just to explain, when you lose body fat, you're not depleting a cell or losing fat completely. It's like bubble wrap. You're popping it and then you're filling it up again. Like a balloon. You've always got these deflated balloons inside you, the bubble wrap, but you're just inflating it or deflating it. And the problem with these diets that we go on, the reason our set point kind of likes to stay in the certain range, is that when we very quickly embark upon anything the fasting or some of the diets you may have tried in your time, Tim, and some of them, I'm sure you lose weight quite quickly, perhaps. And that means your bubble is just going to fill up very quickly when you eat normally again and divide into two. So the mother cell divides into two fat cells, and you're actually growing more fat cells in the process of dieting than you are with what you're trying to do with steady weight loss. And set point theory just states that it will always try and push your body back. So it's nothing to do with willpower. There's a biological element here. It's evolutionary that's telling your body, I don't want to do what you're doing right now. I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that you gain the weight. I'm going to store more fat from the food you eat rather than utilize it for energy like I normally would in a different state. So the diagram in the book is like a lovely circle, and you'll be able to follow that journey all the way round. And you can read into it more if you like. But I think it's quite an important theory to realize that we're all unique and the number on the scales isn't accurate.
You know, I think that it is a theory, but it resonates with me. Let me just tell you about the plant-based. I just decided to try it. And can I just state at this stage, I'm not saying that the plant-based is not a good diet. However, I began on the plant-based diet and I found it absolutely amazing. I just wanted to try it because everyone who comes on my TV show is plant-based these days. I thought, what are they all doing? So I thought, well, I might as well try it as well just to see. I like to be informed and I like doing these things. And so I've done it. I did it for about, so I started October, November, September, so about 5 or 6 months or something. And then what happened was you don't realize, because things happen very slowly. And I was away and I was in a swimming in the Arctic Ocean, actually. It's very cold.
Wow.
And I got out and I had a picture taken of me, and I just looked at my body and I sort of went, holy crap, I have not noticed that. Look, I was about 80 kilos when I started, and I went down to 72 kilos. I even went down to 70 at one stage. So it's a mass weight loss. To begin with, it was just like, I kind of felt quite ripped. But when I saw this picture of me 5 or 6 months later, and let me just state again, I'm not saying plant-based diet is not good, but I looked like I looked very scrawny. And then I started reading your book and everything, and I thought, this is not good. I think there's a problem here. So I quickly Googled it, and then I started reading your book when I got back. I think what happened is my body started taking all the fat out of my muscle, or whatever, out of my muscles, because I looked quite weak. I was very light. And people had kept saying to me over the last 2 months, God, you've lost a lot of weight. And I said, I haven't. But what had happened is I, for some reason, well, my body was just going, look, we don't like this. And so I wasn't losing any more fat around my belly, which I haven't got masses, but I have some. It started coming out of my muscles. So the body works by trying to adapt. Now, I think what happened was I became, which is what you point out with the set point and everything, is I became absolutely starving all the time. I couldn't get enough food inside me, but I wasn't putting any more weight on. And I was just consuming so much tofu, beans, you know, just anything to try and get the weight back on to me. I think probably I wasn't supplementing enough, or I wasn't eating the right groups enough. I wasn't doing the complete proteins. I wasn't informed enough, and so I wasn't eating correctly. I was just stuffing as much crap into my face as possible. I'll just add one more thing to it, is I became very uncomfortable with bloating and wind, and so there was something not quite right with what I was doing. So, yeah. You know, as I say, plant-based people will be shouting at this, going, no, you've done it wrong. Yes, I have done it wrong. But I'm not stupid. I'm quite well informed. But I was not feeling good at the end of it. I've come off now and I feel a lot better. So, you know, I eat loads of fruit and vegetables, but I've supplemented it with back to fish and meat and stuff.
I mean, as a health professional, I would be dissecting, if you came to me in my clinic and you said this to me, first of all, it's not my place to pass judgment on what way you choose to eat. My role is just to help you be the healthiest version you can be of yourself. And it does sound to him like your body composition changed, that this wasn't working for you. Perhaps there are several reasons why it could not have been. You mentioned the nutritional profile. Well, some people thrive off a high protein, like low carb diet. We have this data. Others thrive off a high carb, lower protein diet, believe it or not. There's everyone's different. There's a genetic element, a DNA element here to people that we don't have enough resources or data to be able to individually test everybody for. It's very, very difficult. This is all new emerging science, but maybe it doesn't suit you. And plant-based is confused with veganism all the time. It's actually, the definitions are different, but they're all, because it's a friendlier term than vegan in the media, it's often used as plant-based means vegan, basically, but it's not. It's just limiting animal products. So some people, the best way to transition to getting more plants into their diet is to just limit their meat intake that week to maybe once a week, if they had it more, or twice a week. Still consume their eggs and dairy like normal if that's part of their diet, but really reduce it. So over time, you're giving your body the time to adapt, because iron deficiency, I mean, iodine, which regulates your thyroid hormones, your cognition, your brain, how your brain functions. We're talking about calcium deficiencies, because calcium from plant-based sources is actually harder to absorb into the body. So it's not as bioavailable as it is when you consume, you know, animal produce for some people. And there will be people that will always be anemic, even if they eat animal products, they'll still be anemic. You know, it's one of these things that I find so bizarre that anyone can say one size fits all with diets. So yes, plant-based may be good for the planet, for the future, but looking at it as a weight loss tool in the way that you did, I think is where the nutrition and health industry needs to step up and just educate people that this isn't a choice to do with weight loss here, guys. This is a way of living that some people choose. We've got beneficial bacteria we know that thrives off having more plants in our diet, but it doesn't mean you have to go extreme. What about omega-3? What about fatty acids that we haven't even touched on yet? That there's tons of research, it prevents, you know, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, the umbrella of dementia essentially that we're looking at and investigating. So I'm really glad you shared that story, because there is no one size fits all with nutrition, and it upsets me that people do pedal push that. Plant-based may be wonderful for so many people, but for others, it's just simply going to be not approachable.
Yeah, well, my biggest problem with it is maybe I was supposed to supplement, and I don't believe in supplements. I think I should be able to get it all through through my food, because I think I'm a human and I should be able to do that. Just a quick one on that, though. I did lose completely all my fat. I became like the most ripped I've ever been in my life, and then the fat came back, which is why I believe in your theory of the set point. Because I didn't change my diet, and yet my little belly, or big belly, whichever way you look at it, it came back, and I was like, hold on, where's this fat coming from? I exercise every day, I'm doing that, and so when I read that, I thought, that makes sense. My body went, hold on a second, we need that fat, because what if there's a bit of a famine coming up? I need to do it. So I sort of agree with that. The other thing which I thought was interesting about it, though, is the mental side of it. When you talked a lot about diet and the mental side of things. When you do things like go on the carnivore diet, it's really hard mentally, because I've been educated all my life to eat fruit and vegetables, and suddenly I'm cutting that all out. When you do the fasting diet, there's some sort of weird sensation you get after a while. I've done intermittent fasting. I did the version that you talk about in your book, which is the giving up breakfast, going from 12 to 12. And I really enjoyed that. And I did it for quite a long time. I don't do it anymore, by the way. But I did do it. And you sort of you get a bit of a buzz that you're controlling your hunger. You get really hungry for 2 or 3 hours. And you think, God, I feel really good about myself. When you go plant-based, it's really interesting. You go to a restaurant, there's nothing to order. So you sort of, there's something nice about having no choice. And, you know, but then also you're getting this amazing control over your diet. I'm not doing any dairy. I'm not doing that. I'm going to supplement with this. I'm going to have of tofu today rather than I'm having beans. And I think that control over our diet, that discipline, is something that we sort of crave as humans. We like discipline. We like to be in control. And through diet, I realized probably mentally, I quite enjoyed doing plant-based because I had to cut so much out. It was really weird. Do you agree with that?
I think what you've touched on is hugely controversial and fascinating, and one of the areas I loved about nutrition research, which is why I went on to study the psychological kind of, you know, disordered eating relationships and interventions. And I there's lots of theories, but I do believe, and I discuss this in the book in depth as well, that As humans, we thrive off routine. We know this. We see children, we see babies, we put them in routines. They're happier, they're healthier individuals. We like to have structure in our lives. And food is one area that we've got a nature-nurture thing going on where we live in what we call an obesogenic environment in scientific literature, which means there's food available 24/7. There's so much choice on the menus in the Western world anyway. We are overly spoiled with the access to food we have. And to suddenly have a level of restriction taken away from you in terms of what you can eat, or suddenly in life that you don't normally get, can give you a buzz. But there's a biological argument that when you go through a period of starvation as well, so the brain's not used to getting as much glucose or energy as quickly as it normally gets, it gives off a euphoric sense. And we see this a lot in eating disorder clients, particularly in the eating disorder anorexia, where we see people start to really become on a high, like an absolute euphoric high on a starvation diet or something, because their body is going, help me, I'm in famine. So I'm going to protect you and create a psychological cover to mask the hunger, to mask how you're actually feeling and give you a high. So there's so many different areas from what you've just said that I'm going, oh, I love this conversation, because yes, we love control. But it's also toxic to us at the same time that we're not able to have these internal debates with our mind. We've got our inner critic and our inner child, I'm sure you may have spoken about with guests before, and these debates and arguments that we have with ourselves every single day versus the body's capacity to deal with what you're putting it through and the changes. So it's hugely interesting to see how different individuals proceed. Like, you clearly are able to experiment with your diet in a way that I think a lot of people probably can't actually. So some people can't bear the thought of veering from their sense of control and routine every single day. You know, the thought of doing and trying what you've done would just be too much for them and trigger a binge eating cycle that would spiral out of control. We're all so different in the way we respond to things.
Yeah, but I wonder that might be me having a problem rather than, I mean, look, why am I trying all these diets? I like doing it because I think I'm interested in it all. And I'm interested in experimenting. I put myself on a mushroom trial as well. But I think it's like, by the way, mushroom is psilocybin, as in the magic mushroom, not just eating mushrooms every day. But I guess
that would be.
I put myself on these charts maybe because I want that control. Maybe I'm a bit, you know, maybe that's a problem with me, that I'm looking for control, and things that I can control are my diet. So I'm like, well, I'm going to control this because it's something in my life that I can control. Maybe that is it. I just want to make one more comment on this, actually. Carbs is a really interesting one, because I've been educated for 20 years, possibly, that carbs are bad. No carbs before MARBs. Bread will make you fat. This. So I read your book and it starts going, and it's really, honestly, it's totally changed my life reading that one chapter on carbs and stuff, because I exercise a lot, and I need, according to your book, I need carbs. And it seems to me that it's one of those food groups that I think I can just do without, because obviously it will make me fat. Yet when I went plant-based, I had to start eating bread. Otherwise, there was nothing else. I had to eat sandwiches and stuff, and I was making sure it was whole wheat and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I was starting to start. So it's interesting that we as a population have been absolutely brainwashed into believing that carbohydrates are bad for you, haven't we?
Absolutely, 100%. I will caveat the previous thing you said, I'm not a psychologist, so I can't really comment on your state of wanting to embark upon these different diets. But it's, you know, a sense of control is right. And I think, like you said, it's very hard when you grow up in a society that tells you one food group should be demonized and is bad. Therefore, the minute you have it, you should compensate with over-exercising or under-eating or the way you choose to live at home, because you are going to just put on weight if you touch one slice of bread. It's absolutely absurd. And like I said earlier, the DNA component that a lot of the westernized, so you've got different pockets in the world, and I discuss this in the book, where we've got a lot of research, for instance, over in Japan, we've got a lot of research on diets. The Mediterranean diet's another extremely interesting one, in Scandinavian diets, so things like in Norway, where a lot of the food that you should be eating is the basis of whole grains. You know, whole grains come into factor here quite a bit. And in Japan, they live off white rice They have it at every single meal, even congee in these lovely, as you probably know on your show, you probably cooked loads of these delicious dishes before. And they're not a large population if you look at their traditional cuisine. The human body is built to utilize carbs. Now, for some people, that threshold will be lower than others. For some people, their DNA, and they're simply the way they are, means no, they shouldn't be having loads of it, but they still should definitely have it in their diet, especially if you're a performance athlete. I've worked with footballers, and I've worked with Ronnie on a book, Ronnie O'Sullivan, before, who I know you've spoken to. And,
yep.
You know, carbs fuel, and he's a huge runner. He's a huge advocate of running. And when we had this discussion together about carbohydrates, he said it changed his life because he always felt so guilty for the need to want that porridge in the morning, to want to eat the bread, to want to have the pasta. You know, he's got such amazing Italian roots in his family, and you know, he loves all this type of foods. And it's just societal. The science purely states glucose is the brain's preferred source of fuel. And what happens when we diet, because only glucose can get through the brain, protein really struggles, fats really struggle. They need a carbohydrate carrier to get through. And that's the most interesting bit, is that when we cut things out, we feel low, we feel lethargic, we feel moody, we don't feel like we're achieving our goals. But like you said, you ate carbs on this plant-based diet and you lost loads of weight. So I think it's just breaking the stigma down and educating that carbs don't just turn to fat in the body. They go to our muscles, they get stored as glycogen, they get stored as energy that's waiting to be released. If your diet's very high in saturated fat, however, that type of energy will probably be preserved in a lot of fat cells and fat stores in your body. So it's the composition. Carbs are not meant to be designed to put on weight. It's how society's built refined carbohydrates, pastries, cakes, biscuits. It's not pasta and rice and oat cakes and grains problem here. It's the combination of fat, sugar, salt with a carb.
Right. So it's the combinations of food that make you put weight on. Yeah. I think what happens is people cut out carbs and then they suddenly see a dramatic weight loss, or a weight loss, maybe not dramatic. And then
it's water.
Well, yeah. So you pointed that out.
Yeah. Because to every molecule of carb, yeah, in the book, I break it down and show you in a diagram exactly what happens when you reduce carbohydrate, because this is what I do with my clients. And when I give lectures at universities, I teach this to students all the time. To every molecule of carb, you attract 3 or 4 molecules of water to that carbohydrate. So this instant weight loss you see on fatty diets is just, oh, there's no molecule there, I'll let go of water weight. Your body looks leaner. You feel, that's why the carnivore diet is so, I've touched on it before in the media and I got attacked, Tim. It was really quite terrifying, but it's
That's the problem. That's the problem with diet now, is everyone's got it. Like, people actually put it on their social media description. I'm plant-based, I'm a vegan, I'm carnivore, I'm pescatarian. It's like they people are identifying with the diet. I mean, I listened to a podcast about it one day and I thought, I wonder what it's like. Wonder what I'm going to feel like. There's this bloke and he eats raw meat. Have you seen him? What's his name? I can't remember him now. I'm King Liver or something. I don't know what his name is. And his body's absolutely amazing looking at it, but he just eats raw liver and he eats bone marrow. This guy's phenomenal. And he's testing. The problem with these people is they seem to test quite well. And when they do their bloods and stuff, that's always the problem. So you get lulled into it. But anyway, mentally, I couldn't do it. And I don't recommend anyone does it. I didn't feel very good on it. To begin with, you feel euphoric. So you start eating meat every day. And I was eating meat 2 or 3 times a day. You start feeling, yeah, come on, alpha male. And then after a while, you start feeling miserable as hell. Well, I did anyway on it. I don't want the carnivores coming after me. I imagine they're hungry. When I was in the Arctic, it was funny. There's polar bears everywhere, so you've got to worry about polar bears. But they started talking about why polar bears don't really want to eat humans. And the reason is because we don't have a lot of fat on us. They want to eat seals, and they eat 100. A healthy polar bear eats 100 seals a year. They don't eat the innards. They eat the skin and the fat. Their bodies, want the fat. They want the blubber. Yeah, that's what they want, the blubber. So that's what they eat. And they started to look at, and then they compared it to an elephant and showed how the polar bear keeps all its heat in, and how an elephant doesn't. They said if you see a skinny polar bear, right, that's the one which is going to eat you, because they're getting cold. So, they want the energy fuel inside you. That's why elephants, they're not carnivore at all because they don't need any fat. They're in a hot area. They've got big ears rather than small ears, blah, 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 blah. But what occurred to me is that what are we supposed to be? Because I think the human being has gone so far away. So I was at a dentist recently and I said, maybe I should be whitening my teeth. And he goes, your teeth are the color they're supposed to be, like a yellowy sort of like, you know, a whitey yellowy color. And I said, no, they should be whiter. And he's like, no, they shouldn't. That's not natural. And, you know, you're not going to believe this, but did you know that women actually have hair on their bodies? I mean, it's quite unbelievable because we haven't seen any in any movies or anything for bloody years. But women are actually grow hair. So we've completely got rid of the idea that women have any hair on them. Our teeth are supposed to be like chalk white. What are we supposed to be? I imagine we're supposed to have, especially women, a little bit of fat on them. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, men in society are told to beef up. Women are told to shrink down, quite literally in every aspect of the word, mentally and physically. It's crazy. I think, evolutionarily speaking, again, if you look back thousands of years at the body images and ideals that are celebrated in the history, you know, you look at old paintings on the wall of, you know, murals and things of women and men, the body shapes are so different back in the day. And it's only really the Greek gladiators and these types of images that maybe started to emerge. And then in different places around the world, we see different shapes and sizes as being healthy or ideal. And a lot of this is just created by fashion. It's a fashion thing and it's a media thing. It doesn't dictate how healthy we are. Women are meant to, again, it's a personal choice for women. They don't have to, but carry children. And to be able to have energy, you need fat preserves to grow a human. I know I've got my one son. I'm pregnant now. You know, it's like it's blooming exhausting having children. They're not meant to be fatless. And these body fat percentages, in fact, women lose their periods when they go below a certain body fat percentage. And a lot of the athletes that we've worked with, that's been an area that's been very difficult because they're expected to be performing these incredible time-related targets or physical tasks, yet they're not having regular menstruation. And that's a problem because their hormones aren't functioning in the way they're meant to be functioning. And for men, they can reach an incredibly low body fat percentage without hormones being disturbed, but it doesn't mean that's going to have a long-term positive impact on their body, on their joints. We see a lot of athletes, when they retire, have a lot of problems with their body physically because of the strenuous strain it's been under. So it's a big discussion, that one, Tim. Professions dictate how we look because of media images. Doesn't make it right, and it has to change. That's another reason why in the science of nutrition, I didn't want a person on the front cover. I wanted this to be a book that's going to have diagrams and images from a purely, you know, you can see blood vessels type diagram that doesn't discriminate, that can just show everybody the human body is a fascinating, amazing thing. You said the guy that lives off raw meat. Well, humans are here to survive. We are very clever. We will survive throughout anything, pretty much. We can survive intense famines sometimes for a prolonged period of time. Doesn't mean in the future, in 10, 20, 30 years, that will have been good for us. But we definitely are fighters as a race.
I tried the keto diet as well, by the way. I forgot to mention that to see what happened. I could never get my body into
keto. Yeah, I thought that might come up.
I could never get it in there. I don't know why, but my body doesn't seem to want to go into keto. It's because I'd wee on those strips and stuff. I wouldn't wee on them. I'd wee and then put the strips in. And my body never seemed to get there, even though I was trying my hardest.
The only research we have for keto is for epilepsy, for people with epilepsy, in terms of preventing the amount of fits. It's not actually something we recommend at all. And I'd be surprised if you were on the carnivore diet, if you didn't reach it, because that's technically a ketogenic diet as well, within reason. But you'd be surprised. There are small, tiny traces of carbohydrates in meat. You know, there are these traces of other things and nutrients in foods that you would least expect. Like there's protein in broccoli. It's a smaller trace, but it's there. So, yeah, for some people, their body just will not and does not want to do what people try to manipulate it to become. The science of nutrition definitely means finding what works for you, which is so hard when we don't devote time to it. But you've tried quite a lot, so you've probably figured out that one kind of strict diet doesn't work for you and you need to get a little bit of a mishmash of all of them.
Yeah, I never tried to actually see if I went into keto when I tried the carnivore diet, bizarrely. So that was so stupid because it's very similar, isn't it? So it's a similar idea, and I probably would have. No, what's fascinating about this is you say I've tried a lot. I've ended up being very confused about what I should be doing. That is the reality of it. I'm also bombarded by people telling me constantly that I need to have this supplement, that supplement, just social media. That's why I do genuinely love your book, because you've made me feel like actually I could just go back to the way I probably ate when I was younger and just eat a rounded diet. And I used to eat loads of fruit, well, I still do eat loads of fruit and vegetables and carbohydrates and protein, so I'm probably better just to do that than try and do a fatty diet, though I did enjoy doing all my trials.
I mean, we should touch on supplements as well, just quickly, because they have a place for some people, but you absolutely do not need to be buying supplements that say de-bloat or detox or grow your hair miracle with a gummy. Or the only supplements that we have evidence the majority of people may need are vitamin D, because of a lack of sunshine in certain countries where we live, it may be beneficial. Folic acid if you're in pregnancy, calcium if you have a deficiency in your aging, you know, sarcopenia, so bone mass reduction is a big problem, especially in the Western world as we age. Omega-3, if you don't eat fish, you might benefit from an omega-3 supplement as well, because actually the quality of fish is declining, so that's another whole different conversation. You know, we're not getting the same nutrients from food we used to, but there is no miracle pill that will do what diet does. Food first is the approach everybody should be having, and that's a problem. We rely on quick fixes, we rely on these supplements, and we think these things are enough to make up for a poor diet, but it's not really.
Yeah, again, I go back to your book and how I felt like I was at school, because you say all the things you need, the vitamins and minerals you need, and then you point out the foods you get them from, and I think that's important. You know, everyone who's decided that they're intolerant to something, I mean, that must really annoy you. That, I mean, because there are people who are genuinely intolerant, but everyone who's cutting out dairy from their diet or gluten from their diet, and they don't need to, that must be quite an issue.
It's huge. What's so scary and what's so sad or saddening for us is that in the Retrition Clinic, so I run a team of registered dietitians and nutritionists, and we work in a variety of areas, from gut health to obviously weight maintenance, fertility, sports nutrition. And in all of these, we have clients coming in with a list this long of things that they've been told they're intolerant to. They've paid £500 plus or extortionate amounts of money for these expensive kits. And like you said at the beginning, you jokingly said, you know, they're allergic to avocado. Well, actually, we have had clients come back and say they can't have, they're intolerant to avocado. They're intolerant to eggs, beans, pulses, lemons, random items. We do not have any accurate intolerance kits apart from a dairy intolerance, which you can get at your local GP, and you do not have to pay for it. And we would never dream of charging. And an intolerance is not the same as an allergy. And these things are an allergy can be life-threatening. It's immensely frustrating for people that need a dairy-free option, and people see dairy as just acne-provoking, or, you know, we don't have enough data. For some people, it might have a little response of acne, but not for the majority. And then gluten is another one. Gluten, I think this trend started in America, was hailed as being the evil, weight devil component. Still, to this day, I'll post a meal on social media containing wheat and get a lot of comments underneath that it's terribly bad for you. It's to say frustrating is the least, because I think it really is a lack of education. I think the pages on, for anyone that's got the book, I have a whole section towards the end, just before the child development section. I have a whole section on child development as well, on FODMAPs, IBS, inflammatory diets, and page 162 to 163, I discuss should I cut gluten and lactose from my diet. I mean, I explain with a diagram, actually going into the blood cells as well, what happens in your body if you are experiencing an allergy or an intolerance. So I hope it helps people, because it's it's a minefield. It's very easy for people to say, oh, I'm intolerant to this.
It is an absolute minefield. That is true. And because we're being told constantly to eat this superfood or eat that superfood, this will do the job. Yeah. Eat goji berries and you'll never get cancer, that sort of thing. It becomes quite hard. The one I noticed, actually, I was desperately trying to find it there, was the coconut oil thing that we were all made to do for a while, which was, and you show on the thing that olive oil is brilliant for you, and then rapeseed oil is very good for cooking in, which I love, because I didn't know that. That's why I say it's an education. But then all the way down the line is coconut oil, which is not great, not as well. I'm sure it's not bad for you, but it's not as good as the others. So, and it could potentially be bad for you, couldn't it, if you have too much?
Well, yeah. It's so high in saturated fat.
That was it.
Like this trend of putting it in, saturated fat levels. So people used to talk about mono and triglycerides and all these sorts of things. And like, oh, let's have a shot of our MCT in our coffee. I saw it in shops and juice bars and places. Let's add a spoon of coconut oil.
Yeah, I had one of those. It's like a buttery coffee. Ugh, I had one. I didn't like it anyway. They're not good for you.
Honestly, what a strange diet to mix caffeine with a whole load of saturated fat butter in the morning to replace food. I can't get my head around that one. And I've actually questioned the owner of this company several times and just been sent, they have no scientific backing, just been sent blog articles of anecdotal, it worked for me, it could work for you kind of research. So we don't have research behind this adding the brand that adds fat to coffee every single morning. But some people use it as a hunger, to kind of prevent hunger. So one book in particular was a huge success many years ago. And I was studying at this point my master's degree, and it came out everywhere, had a kind of sugar theme. And the writer said, if you're hungry, just have a spoon of coconut oil instead of eating, and it will keep you full until dinner. Mm. And it was this very toxic dietary advice to people to consume a whole load of essential fat rather than turn to something that could nourish them, like an apple or a handful of nuts or just anything. It's quite a strange diet culture mentality that we still have surrounding us when it comes to food.
Well, it's big money, isn't it? I mean, it's big money. I noticed in your book you just discussed the alkaline diet. I've got a bit of a problem with the alkaline diet because my brother, when he was dying of cancer, was told by a holistic doctor to go alkaline. But he actually had cancer and he was in the last days, and it did help him. But she was trying her hardest with enzymes and stuff. But the a newspaper did an article on him, and I did it to promote Macmillan Nurses. And sadly, they decided to run alongside it the celebrities who are on the alkaline diet. And I was so angry about it because it's like, no, my brother was on it because he had cancer and he was dying. He had pancreatic cancer. He was dying. He was desperately trying to get the most out of his life, what little he had left. He wasn't doing it as a fad, for fuck's sake, excuse my language. And suddenly there was all these celebrities who were doing alkaline and they were doing it, saying it was a great way of eating. And it's like, is it? I mean, what the? And then you look at the foods which I don't understand what alkaline diet is, because half the foods look acidic to me. You're allowed to eat. I don't get it anyway. My brother was taking special enzymes, and he was not allowed to eat things like curries, which you understand, and roast dinners and heavy meals. That's because his body needed his body to break down the food as easy as possible. So they wanted him to eat much lighter, easier to break down foods. It was done for that purpose. But you know, there you go. That's what happens when people talk about these alkaline diets and things.
It's very sad how things get taken out of context a lot of the time when diet's mentioned. And, you know, I'm not a cancer specialist with nutrition, but some people spend their whole lives, registered dietitians, working in oncology and different cancers. And there's actually a lot of research we now have that for specific cancers, the dietary requirements change. So, you know, if you've got breast cancer or pancreatic cancer, different, you know, bowel cancer, there will be different dietary interventions for these different types of cancers. And it's really sad to see that was taken out of context, because we know the alkaline diet is not a cure for cancer. He was just in those last days really just desperate, like you said, just to do something to enhance his life, which is his decision completely. So these celebrity trends, and this is when diet becomes dangerous, when people take their dietary advice from the media, from newspaper headlines, and you'll never get the full context. As you know, the nuance is lost in any media article you have surrounding nutrition. There's so much more to be said than can be fit. Even for me writing this book, I was told, oh, you have to cut back, cut your words. It was constant. I'd written far too much to go into what seems like a big book, but I had tons. And it was not losing the arching message that was so important to me, because anyone could take this book and read it and apply it to their current life situation. But, you know, I hope I make it clear that if you have an individual condition, you need to go into that and see a specialist in that condition.
You're very clear on it, and you're very clear that everyone's bodies act differently, which is I think fundamental on this. By the way, you've just made me realise one of the things I think my brother really had at the end of his life with that diet was he had a bit of control back, because when cancer's taking your body away from you, my brother had a mind, but his body wasn't working, so he's fully, you know, fully compos mentis, but just didn't have it. And that was gave him the ability to control a bit of his life, which I think was great. And it enhanced him, because he had all these things that he could take and he thought it was making him better, but sadly it didn't. Hydration's very important. You point that out a few times in your book. We must make sure we stay hydrated. The body loves a drink, doesn't it, of water, not alcohol. loves a drink, doesn't it?
It does. No, we all love a drink. I think, on a kind of very simplistic nutrition message, but one that seems to be really hard to follow for so many people, myself included some days, and I'm a nutritionist. Some days I don't drink as much as I should do. We are 60% water. All the cells in our body need water to send signals to other cells to function adequately. It can help prevent fatigue, tiredness, concentration levels. One of the best tips you can have, and I didn't do this obviously personally, but before my footballers would go on for a game or they'd do a performance, I'd always say maybe 2 to 3 hours before, just check the colour of your urine. So I put a urine chart in the books. This is what I do with a lot of clients. And, you know, I'd say, I obviously don't want to see it, but tell me, is it pale yellow? I'm not a doctor. I don't need to look at that bit. And then we'd get a rough idea of how hydrated they are before the game. At an extreme in sports nutrition, we weigh people to see how much water weight they can lose, which goes again to the equation of the scales and water, versus when they come off the pitch or at halftime and what we have to top up on. And it's a complex art. But in order to function and do anything, you need water. And you will notice your appetite changes with how hydrated you are. And the foods that you crave or the foods that you fancy more of that day will also change. But in the winter months, in the UK especially, people just don't. You just don't. Mm. And you'll turn to fruit juices or... And I found it very difficult that I had to write coffee counts towards your water intake, because technically, according to our NHS and the guidance of PHE, Public Health England, it does. But at the same time, caffeine's a diuretic. So it's going to trigger a bowel movement or trigger you to go to the toilet, which is why a lot of people need that cup of coffee in the morning. They're so used to using that to then go to the loo. But actually, you're better off just drinking it straight if you can, or if you have to have a bit of squash, do it. Just get the water in.
Yeah, there's as well as the urine chart, there's also a feces chart as well, and tells you whether you've got healthy poos or not, doesn't it? So it does.
Yeah, you can rate yourself 1 to 5.
Yeah, I'm all right actually in that. When I was doing the plant-based diet, I don't know if anyone else on plant-based here feels this, but you just end up having a lot of stuff coming out of you. It's because you're eating so much fiber to try and fill that hunger gap. It felt like it was intense some days. I mean, that sounds like a laughable thing to say, but it was. I was just, you know, I felt like a cow. I was just eating so much stuff that, you know, and I wasn't putting weight on it. It was kind of a very strange scenario. But interestingly about drinking, I know we're sort of coming out of time now, but drinking, what was fascinating about when I was a kid, I suddenly thought to myself, it was really strange this. I was in my sort of 20s or something. I thought, why am I drinking an orange and not eating it? This seems really weird. And that I moved on to drinking fizzy drinks. I was thinking, because I actually saw something in a magazine, so it can work the other way as well, where it showed me how much sugar was in a can of Coke. And I thought, why am I doing that?
Yes.
This is insane. Why would I even contemplate it? Because I like water. Yeah. But I've actually worked with people who say, I don't like the taste of water. And I thought, you are the most unhuman person I've ever met, that you can't drink. My parents and my grandparents never drank water. They drank tea. You know, it's like they don't, well, they do drink water now, my parents, but my grandparents only drank tea. They would never sit down and have a glass of water. Mm-hmm. How far have we got away from being a mammal that we can't actually drink the stuff which is going to keep you alive? It's crazy, isn't it?
I mean, don't even get me started on the myth surrounding tap water in the UK, because there's this other kind of scary side where we've got misinformation and what we call pseudoscience on types of water that we have access to. And it's really crazy, because water is something that, like we said, we need to survive. But the fluoride that comes in tap water is so minimal, but it's actually there for dental health just as much as, you know, anything else. And you don't need to rely on bottled water in this country, which we're so fortunate for. And a lot of places around Europe, you know, we've got to take a moment back and be thankful for the access that we actually have to hydration in this country and clean water. When you said I feel we've lost a huge disconnect as human beings. And I know people may think it's all very well, her sat there saying that, you know, she's a nutritionist, she can afford, you know, I know there's social discrepancies. I know that everything isn't fair. But one thing everybody has is water. And you're right, the going to buy a bottle of Coke, which contains up to 30 grams of sugar, well above what you should be having across the course of a day, if that adds on top of your normal diet, is mind-boggling. But there are ways around it. So the positive side, you know, you can infuse fruit into it, you can make some lovely mixtures yourself. Herbal teas are not so bad. If people enjoy a herbal tea, it's got no caffeine in it as well. That's a great way to hydrate. You can make these cold brews in the summer. I know some clients love to do that. They get a big vat and they test themselves, see if they can get to the bottom of the, you know, 2-liter bottle in a day. And you can get flavors to it. But a lot of it does stem from how you're brought up, childhood, and where you live, essentially.
I've got two more quick questions, but we've come to the end of the hour, so I'll get through these two quickly. The first one is, because I know people always say this, which is, I can't afford to eat properly. When my children went off to university, I've always understood that, and I get it, but when my children went off to university, they said, we haven't got budgets to live on, you know, they're doing it and they want to do it themselves, they're very good. And I said, just go and buy lots of vegetables, they're cheap, and you can go and get them. You do not need the organic ones. Just find the cheap vegetables because they're great. But then I read in your book that actually the science behind organic being that much better is a bit sketchy, isn't it? So I was right to say to them, eat the vegetables. They're cheap, and you can get, you know, you can get cauliflower for about 50p these days, 50, 60, if you shop around, 50, 60p.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely, frozen bags of veg, guys, as well. It's so affordable and it's always there. It's not going to go off either. You know, you can pull it out and just whack in some peas and ready sliced peppers and things like that as well into your diet. Organic, we're not there yet. It's not possible. It's not physically possible to grow crops in the world to the amount that we need without the use of these additional elements that are added to crops. Now, agricultural nutrition isn't a forte of mine, but I did a lot of research for this book to make sure. And there's a lot to consider here in terms of water use, where water then ends up in the river from the crop, how much we need to yield. But ultimately, the nutritional difference, which is where I come in, is a fraction. It's so marginal that you're not missing out on anything at the moment from shopping non-organic. It's just totally, the cost just rockets through the roof. It might make you feel better. It might be a lovely placebo if you've got a budget and you can shop organic, enjoy it. But
I think the taste sometimes is better. Yeah, exactly. And my final question for you, because everyone wants, what should we be eating? I assume it's eat the rainbow.
I mean, that's lovely, isn't it? If everybody can eat a rainbow every single day. I think that's such a nice way of saying it. But realistically speaking, you do the best you can. There's no should, but you want to be aiming for a plate, if you can, with carbs, bit of protein, healthy fat, and some fruit and vegetables at your meals. And yes, the more variety, yes, the more plants, all this, you know, get 30 plants a week or get, you know, every type of grain into your diet is just so unrealistic for so many people out there that it can almost put them off. So my advice is try one new food a week if you can. If you see a vegetable on offer that you haven't bought before, give it a go. Google it, YouTube it. You're bound to get loads of amazing recipes that come up to give you inspiration for a new food you haven't cooked before. But stick with that balanced plate if you can at every meal, and you can go buy hand-sized portions and mix it up where you can. Frozen veg, lifesaver, like we said, cans of beans and pulses, very cheap and affordable. You can buy frozen fish as well, you know, if you consume animal products, and eggs are another great source of nutrition that's a bit more affordable as well. So my mindset is there is no should. It's do what you can, but maximize what you can. You know, healthy to one person, Tim, could be, oh, I just ate a piece of broccoli that day. To another person, it could be, I had a salad. It looks different to us all.
Rhianne, thank you so much. If you can get hold of her book, I would thoroughly recommend it. It's fascinating. I really learned so much from it. It's called The Science of Nutrition: Debunk the Diet Myths and Learn How to Eat Well for Health and Happiness. But what's so great about it is it explains why, and you've bothered to go into that much detail. I'm just finding it must have taken you a long time to write this book, didn't it?
Over lockdown with a baby as well, I will add, it was a bit of a challenge, but I'm very proud of it, Tim.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks, Rhianne. Oh, sorry, if anyone wants to follow you, where should they go, by the way? Because obviously you do talk about things. Where's the best place to find
you? I'm terrible at self-promoting. You should, if you can, this is a should, if you want good nutrition advice, at Retrition, which is R-H-I-T-R-I-T-I-O-N. So Retrition on all social media platforms.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.